John Breaker One, this is Shark Pants Free Radio. Gamers, get your ears on, because we're blowing the speakers out.
Grimdark Live. Weekly webcast for all things dice, dragons, demons, and a dwarf in the Warhammer worlds. Don't miss our live show on Thursdays, but for now, you've got us on sloppy seconds with our podcast with the Grimdark Gang. It's time once again for Grimdark Live.
Hey, welcome to Grimdark Live, the webcast for all things dice, dragons, demons, and dwarves in the Warhammer worlds. I'm your host, Patrick, and as always, my co-host, Steve. What do you hear? What do you say, bud?
Well, this week we're going back to the future here with Warhammer, the old world.
I know. I cannot believe that we're actually again talking about this. But you know what's funny? We're going to go back to that conversation we had in November, almost 4 months ago, when we talked about the old world, when Warhammer Fantasy Battles was first kind of talked about, when the squares were coming round again. Remember that whole advertisement?
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to see what's going to be transpiring. We're going to talk a little bit about a new potential army release, or unit release, I guess is the best way to put it before we get ahead of ourselves. And I'm sure, folks, for anyone listening, you probably heard every neckbeard behind the microphone already talk about that over the week. But you know what? We're going to give it to you a little bit better. Because you don't want to know why? Because we're Grimdark. We're Grimdark Live. So we're going to talk on that here a little bit. And you know, we're also going to talk a little bit about the sign of the times. You know, we're all kind of hunkering down in this amid this COVID-19 havoc that's our lives right now, and we're gonna be kind of talking a little bit on old Nurgle, old Grandpa Nurgle, and kind of some of the aspects about what that is, and you know, maybe try to throw a little entertainment towards this this little plague that we're going through. Nurgle's kind of fitting for this. What do you think, Steve?
Yeah, I think it would be appropriate.
Absolutely. But yeah, so we've got a pretty good. We got a pretty good show today. I mean, it's going to be kind of a evenly keeled show for us, you know. So it'll be good to get a lot of stuff out there in the open, especially with this rank and flank. I'm really kind of interested to get back on that. I think that's going to be a good topic.
Well, it was the foundation of our hobby originally,
yeah.
And now it looks like GW wants us to go back to the future.
Quick, Marty, to the DeLorean.
Yeah,
sounds
exactly.
Good. Nice. All right. And as always, we have the question of the day and the closing thoughts before the end of the show.
Hey, you Grimdark goons. Thank you all so much for listening to our Grimdark Live podcast. If you're new to the Grimdark Live experience or new to our podcast and like what you hear, please follow this podcast and pass us along to your friends. Let us know what you think about Grimdark Live in the show's comment sections, and let us know just how we're doing. Also, don't forget to catch us live on Thursdays. And if that ain't enough for you, check out our website at www.grimdarklive.com. That's grimdarklive.com. Anyway, thanks for listening, following, and just being awesome.
So let's get this sucker rolling. I mean, we got some pretty hearty topics. We are going to start right off the bat with the news, as we always do. So first thing in the news I want to talk about, something that really kind of caught me, Steve, and I don't know if you saw this in the most recent White Dwarf that came out. This is the White Dwarf number 452. Interestingly enough, I think the White Dwarf is going to a numerical or numbering system on their magazines. Have you seen this yet, Steve?
Yeah, apparently they're just going to move away from May of 20 or whatever.
Yeah,
they're going to move into numbers.
I think that's appropriate because, you know, the way that they deliver, anytime they say May, you usually get that in November.
And it also is helpful too because if someone wants to find something really quick and they have it lined up on a shelf somewhere, they can say, okay, if you want to find this, go to issue, 375, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah,
and it's pretty easy to find.
Yeah, yeah, and it is. I kind of like it. I just noticed the change though, because last month's White Dwarf was issue 451, and they kind of broke rank from, obviously it should have been February, right? But they called it issue 451 this year. This month being March, is now 452. But this is the one we're going to be talking about, White Dwarf number 452. And in the very back of this. of this magazine has a Squigapalooza, and I really love these War Scroll battalions that they're stuffing in these magazines.
Enough, I can only get one for Trolls.
Well, you know what? I think that's going to be coming down the pike. You know, they're getting closer, though, because this one is Squigs here. And I love this. They got this War Scroll battalion called Squigapalooza, and it's for 240 points. And what's great about it is you essentially get four Squig characters. And before all the nerds out there get a half stiffy thinking about this, no, there is no additional models coming out for this one. These, you're gonna have to kit bash these, but you know, it kind of helps infuse a little bit more of that hobby into the hobby, I guess is the best way to put it. But here's what you get. You get a Squigmonger, a Squigmancer, a Squig Cap Shaman, and a Squig Herder with Mini Mangler. So and I love these things. And you know what's funny? Out of the four, three of them are three of them wizards? I think three of them are wizards. The Squigmanger is, or Squigmancer, Manger, whoops, sorry. Squigmancer is a wizard. And the Squig Cap Shaman is a wizard. But it looks like the Squig Herder and the Squigmonger are not wizards. So, you know, yeah, okay, two of them are mages. But it's great. You can take the whole unit for 240 points. But what's interesting about this, you have to take the whole thing as a set, but each is a separate unit. So
I think that's similar to that Gabapalooza.
Yeah, I think it is. It is. But I thought that was kind of, I thought it was kind of interesting. I liked the idea of them doing this. I thought it was very creative.
Yeah, you know, Gloomspite Gits is that army, and you and I have had this conversation a million times. This is an army that just keeps on giving. There's so much you can do with this army, and there are so many new battalions and things that you could come up with because this army is so versatile. I still say to this day, it's the best book that they have made since they relaunched AOS 2. I think it's the best book they've ever made. You can do everything with this book.
I tend to agree with that. Yeah, I do.
If you want to make a tournament level army with this book, you can. If you want to have fun and just play some trolls like I do, you can make that. If you want to play spiders, squigs, it is literally a book that you could never get bored with, which is why I think so many people love Gloomspite Gits. Just think of it. Even if you don't play them, you love playing against them. Like,
oh,
when
yeah.
someone puts a Gloomspite Gits army on the table, everybody smiles because it's an army, number one, that they never see.
Yeah.
Think about it. They never see it.
Yeah.
You never see it because everyone is always meta-chasing. So you're always fighting Slaanesh or Khorne or Nurgle or Tzeentch. And then somebody, you know, you run into some guy at a tournament, you know, some knucklehead like me who puts down an all-troll army. It's like, oh, Jesus Christ, now I can just have a great game, you know? Now I can just have fun.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, and I got to tell you, I agree with you 100%. And that's, you know, anytime, especially if I see squigs on a table.
Yeah, they're fun.
I immediately like, okay, there's no way this is going to be a serious game.
Yes, it's a fun army to play. And I hope these battalions keep coming. I hope they redo the ones for the trolls because the troll battalion absolutely sucks.
A lot of them are pretty poorly done. Yes.
Well, it's overpriced and it does nothing for you. So yeah. I would love to see a new. Well, hopefully in another year or so they'll redo the Gloomspite Gits book and maybe we'll get a better Trog Herd or at least a better ability.
Right.
I mean, adding one damage on a six, you know, when I'm rolling to wound. Sorry, not worth 180 points.
Yeah, but you know, as a side note, I really like what the White Dwarf or the editors or the writing team are doing because in the previous one here too, just as a little by the by, in 451 I'm referring to the one previous to the 452 that we're discussing now, they had a Nurgle army and we're going to be talking about Nurgle a little bit
how appropriate.
Later here in the show. But you know what they're doing, almost like they're doing here with the Squigs, is this this army that they showcase, this Nurgle army, instead of using plague bearers, they took actual Empire soldiers, or I guess I should say Free Guild soldiers, and they doctored them up with green stuff, and they gave them tentacles like they were the humans being morphed by Nurgle.
And I thought that was really brilliant. And so if you guys, that's another thing too, and it's in the Realms of Chaos section, page 103, you get a really good look at it in issue 451. And I really love what they're doing. And here they're doing it again with Squiggs.
Well,
with mages riding them, which is hysterical.
One of the things that you saw a lot of back in Warhammer, the Old World, or as we used to call it, 8th edition,
right,
is you used to, there were traitor legions. Imperial armies that had basically succumbed to one of the chaos gods. And some people actually created like themed armies where you could actually play like a traitor general. And they were fun. I mean, the amount of creativity that you used to see back in 8th edition with the conversions is something that I'm hoping we're going to be returning to in either AOS or this Warhammer the Old World.
I literally forgot all about those conversion armies. God, what an
phenomenal.
That was an awesome thing. You know, you still see that a little bit in 40K, yeah, for instance. Like, you know, people want to do the Dark Mechanicum or something like that, but you really don't see that at all anymore in fantasy. Are those kind of like traitor armies?
They've moved everything to WYSIWYG. So now you know that if you take something into a tournament, you're gonna run into that guy in quotes.
A short pants, you mean?
Say, well, that's not the right model, and you know you're gonna run into that one.
Yeah, and one of our listeners, Dave, I'm sorry, man, I had to do the short pants thing, so there you have it. But it was purposeful. I had to mention them. Yeah, those were
great. Get out of rant. We could take a lot of things during the apocalypse.
No, I'm not going to get on a rant. But you know,
another short pants story.
I'm not going to get on a rant about a short pants. I give you my worthless word. But what
and
I
no
will
dobblers
say is,
either. Can we have a double promise for this episode?
I'll do the best I can. I'm starting to get a little shaky right now. You know, you got me thinking
about
it. I know
you're having withdrawal symptoms.
But I'm gonna do this though. I'm gonna end the little squig in the white dwarf thing here with this. I'm really happy to see that they're hiding these little nuggets, especially at the end of
straight.
Especially at the end of these magazines. It's like back when I used to read a lot of adult magazines.
Will you stop and move on?
No, I want to finish with, a lot of people don't even know there's recipes in the back. And by the time I got through them, it looked like a buzzsaw went through them. But I'll tell you what, you can make a hell of a meatloaf if you just read that far.
Folks, do you see what he does?
What are you talking about? I'm just trying to share a coincidence here, you know? I mean, it was
monitored 24/7.
What do you mean? It was
monitored.
It was Sultry Vixens and White Dwarf. I mean, there's some comparisons
there. No one cares about your time in the Marines. Can we move on?
All right, we'll go ahead and move on. You know, but I'm just, you know, I can't share anything without getting yelled at now, evidently.
Good Lord.
All right, moving on here at the show. So the next thing in the news, I know that this is going to kind of be what everyone is been waiting, I guess, to hear about is the... this coming Saturday, right, is going to be the first Warhammer preview. You know, obviously these are some things that we're supposed to be getting at Adepticon. And the online launch is going to be bringing you the latest bombshell reveals. You know, GW is going to give it to you the way they always do. There's going to be teasers. There's going to be updates. But these reveals, as I said a minute ago, were supposed to be part of the reveals at Adepticon. But this, you know, this whole thing got coronaed, and there you have it. So this is going to be coming at you from two fronts. First is going to be on Twitch, and then there's going to be a live blog via Warhammer Community. And what I'm showing up here on the screen are the actual times of when that's going to occur based on where the heck you are in the world. And what's more, which is kind of interesting, is this is just going to be the first of a series of planned online Warhammer previews. GW actually, I don't know if you knew this, Steve, but they actually have another one that's coming up along on the 4th of April.
Yes, they have two previews coming.
Yeah. So, Steve, I'm going to throw this question over the fence at you. I mean, what do you believe will be revealed between this Saturday and April 4th?
Well, we know we have two armies, one of which is currently in country. And we know that the other, or at least we assume that the other, is still in China. We know that Sons of Behemoth is here. We know it's in country.
That's true.
We know the book's here. We know the War Scroll cards are here.
Right.
You are not going to see anything coming in from China for probably another 2 to 3 months in terms of entertainment, media, things like that. So if Lumineth Realm Lords is still in China, if it's been printed and in a warehouse, they may release Sons of Behemoth first and then release the Lumineth Realm Lords later.
Yeah.
I think Sons of Behemoth was supposed to be second. It was supposed to be after Lumineth Realm Lords or in conjunction with them. But now I'm starting to believe with all this virus stuff going on, they may just release what they have. But they probably won't even do that until May because none of their stores are open until April 14th.
Yeah, yeah. Everything is. I mean, talk about a standstill. I mean,
no, it's the entire country. I mean, there are so many people that I know that are not working because we're just sitting here in this stalemate until we find out the extent of the, you know, the ravages of this disease.
Right. Right. And, you know, and the thing is, we may not know for at least another few weeks. I mean, you know, look, and, you know, here's the thing. I just think, you know, not to get off topic here, but I think the news was this evening. I think the U.S. is now number one in cases, I think.
Yeah, we are number one in cases. Yeah, yeah. But then again, we can never know the full truth because China lies about everything.
Yeah, well, that's true. You don't know how many people they have in mass graves over there, you know?
Yeah, I mean, we just don't know. And I'm not into conspiracy theories. I'm certainly not that type of a person. But I can tell you that, you know, people who are in the know say all the time that China just lies about everything.
Well,
you know,
I tell you,
you can never trust them.
You want a perfect example of a conspiracy theory? Just read a Chinese menu.
I mean, stop.
What are you talking about? You don't know what's in those egg rolls.
Keep moving.
All right. So yeah. So that's what's going to be coming out. We know that that the previews are going to be online and the times below. So it looks like for anyone in this area, in the Chicagoland area, on Saturday the 28th, it's going to be about 8:45 a.m. So that's early for gamers, man. Holy cow. I mean, I don't know if any of them are going to survive having to listen to something at 8:45 in the morning.
It's hard right now. It's hard right now.
I'm trying to be funny. You're right.
A lot of guys, this is the time of the year when they see their buddies that they only see once a year.
Yeah.
And this is the time of the year that guys who are living internationally, you know, they come over and this is like their big vacation. Like for a lot of our fellow guys in the community and gals, this is their vacation. This is the time when, you know, they cut loose for a week and they do what they want to do.
Right.
And now that's been taken away from everyone.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, a guy like me, I had no intention of going to Adepticon other than just, you know, to go down and, you know, and bum around. But there are guys that paid money. There are guys that were expecting to be in two tournaments, you know, both the team and the singles.
Right.
And that's got to be very frustrating for them because not only did they lose their vacation, they lost an opportunity to try out their army that they've probably been working on for months.
Easily months. Easily. Probably half a year with a board and all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Guys that, you know, we only see once or twice a year, you know, and now, you know, like our road warrior, you know, Justin, you know, we only get to see him a couple times a year. And, you know, now they don't come up because they can't do, because no one can do anything. We're in this, you know, this doldrum.
Right. And you know, even Evan and I, we're going to play in the champs. You know, this is a bad time for everyone, but I'll tell you what, on a brighter side, folks, I know that we talked about this on last week's show. You know, it can't rain all the time. And there's a great group out there called Adepticant. And, you can check them out on Facebook. They are an absolute awesome group, and we kind of gave them a lot of props in last week's show, and I just want to kind of let everyone know that it's not all bad. You know, like I said, it can't rain all the time, but you know what, I'm sure Adepticon is going to be back, and there's a lot of other things that are going to be coming up. You know, this will end and we'll all be back to, you know, chucking dice and you know stinking up gaming rooms all across the country and the world before you know it. And I just think that everyone needs to bide their time now and be responsible and be safe and do what you have to do to get through this so that, you know, we can see you on the other side of that table and chuck dice with you. But yeah, so yeah. That's what's happening. Those are the previews that are going to be coming out. And I like the way you put that as far as the Sons of Behemoth, because I think that that's smart if they do roll that out first, because if the Lumineth Realm Lords are still sitting over in China somewhere, then yeah.
Oh, forget about it.
Well, yeah,
it might not be till June or July.
Yeah, I would even hedge our bets to say August, because, you know, let's look at it this way, with this form of virus, this influenza that we're up against. I mean, we all know that they hate heat. So those boxes aren't going to be coming over here anytime before it gets really hot and warm and, you know, outside. I mean, there's a lot of things that have to happen, I think, before, you know, and trust me, the government, the world, everything, a bunch of plastic elves in a box is the
yeah,
it's
they're irrelevant.
On a list of a million things, that's number 6 million. So, as far as
Well,
important, but
I know a lot of people who work in the medical field and the medical industry, you know, the greater medical industry, and it's just a horrible time for them. They're working 12-hour shifts. They're coming home. They're sleeping 5 hours. They're getting a call. Hey, come back to work. I know someone personally that's going through this right now. They've probably slept maybe, you know, 72 hours since this whole thing began, if that's even possible. But this is what we do because we take care of each other. You know, as a country, this is how we unite. And you're right. I don't give a damn about a plastic toy soldier game. I don't care if I ever play this game again if it means someone's life. You know what I mean? So, I mean, I could absolutely care less. So, you know, to the people who are out there, maybe some of the, you know, people who listen to the show, if you are in the medical industry, you have no idea how much we appreciate what you're doing every single day, going out there and putting your life at risk so that other people can get better and get healed. So we love you and thank you for everything that you do.
And you know what? I could echo that 1,000%. You know, you guys are on the front lines, and really to everyone that's considered, and I'm doing the finger quotes right here, the electrical finger quotes, an essential employee. To all you folks out there, you know, from you know the cops and the firemen, to the doctors and nurses and retail workers and restaurant workers and all those people that are out there still, grocery store clerks or people that are out there doing that, you know. I salute you, every single one of you.
A public service announcement brought to you by Frag Factory 3D Printing. Many of us have thousands of dollars in miniatures, yet we play on flat tables with books and overturned Tupperware to act as our fantasy and sci-fi landscapes. We've all drooled over the tables we see in magazines, lush with beautifully created terrain from all genres. The crew at Frag Factory 3D Printing want to wipe that drool from your chin and put it firmly on your friends and fellow gamers when they see your setup. Alien landscapes, desert wastelands, futuristic cities, fantasy outposts, elven forests, demonic stronghold, and so much more. Find out what you've been missing by checking us out on Facebook at Frag Factory 3D Printing, or send us an email at fragfactory3dprinting@gmail.com. Bring your own files or we will help you find what you've been searching for. Take your gaming to the next level with Frag Factory 3D Printing. We print life into your games. Tell them Grimdark Live sent you, and your first hour of printing is free.
Hey gang, in all seriousness, get your terrain on the table and get it with Frag Factory 3D Printing. And remember, tell them Grimdark Live sent you, and they'll give you 1 hour free. You can get them via email at fragfactory3dprinting@gmail.com or their Facebook page, Frag Factory 3D Printing.
Frag Factory 3D Printing, printing life into your games.
Now, back to the show. Let's keep the show rolling, man. Next part of the news here, and here I go again, Steve. I give you my worthless word last week. We're back to the freaking rumor engine again. Here's a picture of a rumor engine that was. I don't know if you have you seen the most recent rumor engine?
Yeah, the one with the blade.
Yeah. And this one was offered recently by Warhammer TV. And this one is interesting. And maybe it's the second part of the Lumineth faction with Tyrion. And this is actually why I swallowed my pride and accepted the fact that I'm a no good BS artist when I give you my word. That I want to talk about this because that, sure. Steve, that is the elf army I'm waiting for, man.
Well,
I want Tyrion.
For dark elves, because that's what I think it is.
You think so? You know what? I picked up on the fact that in the middle of it, where the handle is, and this looks like
looks
almost
like a dark elf assassin.
But what it reminded me of right off the bat was a Covenant energy sword from Halo.
Well, now a what?
You've never, you know, Halo, the Covenant energy sword. Anyway,
I'm
moving
a
on,
PS4
moving on.
Guy, I don't do Xbox.
Gotcha. All right, well, that's what the first thing it looked like. But I noticed a little ruby in the middle. That's very elf, you know, esque.
Yeah. When I looked at that, the first thing that came to my mind was Dark Elf Assassin.
Yeah.
Now, it does not look like a high elf weapon or, you know, Lumineth weapon. It looks like a Dark Elf Assassin's blade, like one of those nasty, like, what do they call those? I think they're called size in Japan.
Oh, like yeah.
They're, you know what I'm, they use them sometimes in martial arts expos.
Yeah.
I think they're called size, but that's what I think it is. I think it's a Dark Elf Assassin's blade.
It's funny because it looks very similar, you know, to almost like a punch dagger. So it could either be for a new version of the Shadow Elves Assassin that was in the Silver Tower. How about that?
Yeah, and Skaven have used that type of blade. They're gutter runners, as I recall. Like in pictures I've seen, Skaven assassins have used those kind of blades.
Yeah, so, but you know what? If you look at the hand, that's not Skaven, though.
No. I don't think it's Skaven, but it looks similar to like an assassin's blade.
Okay.
Because you have to remember, an assassin's not going to use some big long sword. Assassins will use short swords because they want to get up close and gut you.
Yeah, right. They want to see the whites of your eyes as everything.
Yeah, they sure do.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm really hoping that when they get this, when they get this new Dark Elf army out, that assassins go back to being the terrifying thing that they were in 8th edition.
You know, yes, I'm just going to say yes. I think that's what's going to happen. I think that's the idea. Because, but I got to tell you though, I have a feeling. You see, this is just me. You know, I have a feeling that Tyrion's army is going to have a little bit of that anti-hero kind of a feel to it. That's kind of why I thought maybe this. You know, okay, fine, it could be your quote unquote your Dark Elves, but I think this Tyrion army is going to be a little bit more of a Batman than a Superman, if you know what I mean. Going to be a little bit darker, but you know, still fighting for order. That's my thought. At least that's my hope. My hope.
This, I'm looking at everything on this item. I'm looking at the hand.
Yeah,
I'm looking at the ruby or whatever it is and the gemstone in the middle. I'm looking at how wicked that blade looks, and everything about this weapon just screams Dark Elf Assassin. Now, I could be wrong. It could be something 40K. I mean, I know there's like Dark Eldar out there and all that kind of stuff, but I don't know. It just looks like a Dark Elf Assassin's blade to me. That's the first thing I thought of when I looked at it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what? I it could be. Yeah. Like I said, like we just talked about, it could be. I'm kind of hoping though that Tyrion follows through and kind of, you know, pushes his younger, you know, limp leg brother out of the way and, you know, makes me happy.
Yeah. I mean, I will be immeasurably disappointed if Tyrion is part of the Lumineth Rome Lord's army.
Yeah.
I'm praying to God that he is not part of that army and that he is going to be his own separate army, because his style, because I mean, this is a guy who was once the avatar of Kane. So his style of bloodshed is not going to coincide with the Lumineth Realm Lord's finesse. I don't know what word I would even use. They're aesthetic, I guess.
No, and that's a great point. And by the way, folks, another by the by here. If you guys want to read a great story arc of Tyrion and just about him being the embodiment of the Avatar of Kane, read the book Kane regarding the End Times.
Yeah, it is. It's the best of the End Times books.
I got to tell you. Oh, you're not kidding. It really is. It really. Although I did like the Nurgle one. But moving on. But yeah. So good stuff there. So let's keep rolling with the news here, Steve. Because
we
got one last topic that we're going to go through, and that's Armed Forces Day. So yeah. So far, folks, Armed Forces Day is surviving the purge. And we're still on track to have it. And this is going to be our third year for this 100% charity event to support our active duty troops. Armed Forces Day tournament is going to be held May 16th and 17th. And you can head over to grimdarklive.com to check out the information on this tournament. Armed Forces Day 2020 is going to be a two-day Age of Sigmar event where each player can bring 2,000 points of an army comprised of the most recent General's Handbook and AOS rule set. This event is going to be a 1v1, five-game, two-day tournament to provide donations to our active duty troops while celebrating Armed Forces Day, which is a national national holiday to honor those active duty troops. Also, Montford Point Marine Association Chapter 2, there's going to be a separate raffle to support this historic Southside Montford Point Marine Chapter. And after a half a century of being home to those African-American Marines who settled in Chicago after the war in 1946, the chapter is still facing some looming debt with potential for closure. So we are going to do everything we can to see that that those Marines will always have a home. And of course,
absolutely,
yeah. And of course, Armed Forces Day 3 wouldn't be possible without our supporters of GameStorm Gaming and Frag Factory 3D Printing, Ministomp.com, and Six Squared Studios. And we are currently working with a couple of other companies, but of course things have slowed a little bit due to the coronavirus that have reached out and actually wanted to help support this cause. And here's the other thing, folks. I want to tie this little piece up here with the news. If you've been noticing in these White Dwarfs, they have these little battalions, and they've been doing this since January of last year. They are allowed. In the we did make this announcement. This isn't the most recent rev of the players pack, so you can use those battalions. Look at the players pack for further information on that. So just another way that we're gonna, oh, and by the way, and also you'll be able to use Underworld's units, a free Underworld unit, complimentary of Domus and the gang over at Midwest Meltdown. It's their idea, and we asked him very politely if we could plagiarize the hell out of him and steal from him, and they said sure. So good stuff. So that's what we've got coming up there. Steve, anything to add to the news before we roll on to the
yeah, there is. So let's say that the country's still in dire straits by the time the tournament rolls around. What are your plans for the tournament? Are we going to push it back maybe a couple months, or what are your plans if we have to reschedule the date?
Yeah, that's actually an excellent point. Yes, there are a couple of there's a plan B and a plan C that are currently in works. As a matter of fact, this Sunday morning, I'm going to be having a phone call with a particular individual that might help me work out a place to rehab this tournament. And of course, we're going to know here, folks, in the next couple of weeks, sure, if this is going to be a viable tournament or not. And of course, if there's any doubt, I'm not going to put, you know, 32 to 40 people's health and welfare and potentially lives in danger to just to go chuck dice. But I will have more information on that, and I am currently working on that, because hey, I got to face the facts. You know, when a great tournament like Adepticon gets canceled, and another tournament, Brew City Brawl, gets canceled, and I'm sure many other events and tournaments have been canceled due to this. You know, I can't ignore the fact that there's potentiality for Armed Forces Day to be canceled. But so far, all systems go. This is going.
Yeah, May 16th and 17th. Until we know what's going on with this, you know, with this virus. I mean, I think that's fair. And there's no reason why we couldn't just push it back to another date if we had to. So don't panic, folks. If you wanted to come to the tournament, you know, we're still going to do it. We just don't know, you know, if it'll be on those dates. We're hoping that it is.
Yeah, and here's the other thing, folks. You know, if you do sign up, it is currently $40 per person. If you do sign up and it is canceled, I'm going to offer everyone a simple choice to either donate to the USO, or
which would be fantastic,
or as a complete refund. And then you feel free to donate on your own. So that's all, that no questions asked. So anyway, but as that's with all that said, Armed Forces Day 2020, Armed Forces Day 3 is still on May 16th and 17th. So hopefully we'll be in a better spot to be actually be able to have that tournament.
Yeah, I hope so too. I hope our country can get through this.
I think we will. Hey gang, I wanted to take a break in today's show to introduce one of our sponsors and a great store for all of your hobby needs. That's GameStorm Gaming in Lamont, Illinois. Open 7 days a week, 12 to 12.
GameStorm Gaming has got you covered for all of your hobby and gaming needs. They got Magic the Gathering, War Machine, X-Wing, Game of Thrones, Force of Will card game, PC gaming and repair, Warhammer 40K, and Age of Sigmar, and a ton more. Grab paints, brushes, cases, dice, and a lot more at GameStorm Gaming in Lamont, Illinois.
Stop in and see John and the gang there at GameStorm Gaming, located at 1243 State Street, Lamont, Illinois, or check them out on their website at GameStormGaming.com. Again, that's www.GameStormGaming.com.
They also stay open past midnight for special cases and events, so get over there and get your nerd on with GameStorm Gaming, 1243 State Street, Lamont, Illinois, 630-243-9330. Again, that's GameStorm Gaming, 1243 State Street, Lamont, Illinois.
GameStorm Gaming is a proud sponsor of Grimdark Live. We hope to see you there. All right, well, moving on. We're outside of the news now, and I think we're in a good spot to kind of talk about our new this current topic, right? I think this is what we really wanted to get into here, and that's that's the recent news about this Kislev, I guess the best way to put it.
Yeah, Kislev is basically Russia in the old world, and it was run by a Tsarina. Her name was Tsarina Katerina, and basically she was based on Catherine the Great of real history.
Yeah.
And it was one of the most popular releases when it first came out back in the day. But I'll hold that. I know you want to kind of intro the topic a little bit.
Yeah. So, and actually, you know what, folks? My co-host here is an absolute overflowing well of knowledge of this hobby and this game. He's got 25, 26 years in it. So this is going to be a great conversation. So strap yourselves in, man. Make sure you wash your hands first, though. And listen up here. But yeah, the big update on Warhammer the Old World is Kislev is back. And this was a kind of a silent leak back on Monday the 23rd this week. And one new unit that's in the early stages of development is set in the Ice Court, the seat of the ruling Tsar and Tsarina, known as the Ice Guard. And they're an elite fighting formation of warrior women that are equally skilled with bow and blade. But where they differ significantly from the other Kislev units, I guess the best way to put it, we've seen in the past, is that they're able to channel the elemental magic of their realm in similar manner of the Ice Queen. So, Steve, what are your thoughts, man? Take it away.
Yeah, there was a White Dwarf issue many, many, many years ago when Kislev first came out, where they introduced a new lore of magic called Ice Magic. And it was basically the magic of the North. It was the magic of Kislev. And the Tsarina was the master of that particular craft. Kislev is a very interesting army. Number one, they were always facing the brunt of chaos. If Kislev fell, so did the Empire. And the Emperor always knew this, which is why he always was friends with the Tsarina, and which is why he always sent aid whenever she called. As a matter of fact, one of the best Gotrek and Felix books is when they go to Kislev and they fight against the Chaos Hordes.
All right, what's, do you have the title of that one?
Oh God, I wish I remembered the name of it.
We're gonna find that, folks, and I'll leave it in the show notes, or Steve will, or somebody will.
But I suggest reading all the Gotrek and Felix books from book one all the way through. Anything written by William King is an absolute classic. But at any rate, so Kislev always had to be the best. They always had to have the toughest fighters. The Winged Lancers were some of the best cavalrymen in the world. Their archers were superb. Their warriors, their foot soldiers had to be masters of their craft, because Kislev always had to face chaos first. And whenever chaos got past Kislev, the Empire was in trouble. But they never took the capital city. They never took their version of Moscow, you know, which is essentially what it was.
Right. And I also loved, in the old world, even in the old 8th edition Warhammer Fantasy Battles Ogre Kingdoms book, they commented on the ogres were obviously continually moving east. And of course, folks, if you know anything about the ogres, they're more of the Mongols, right? That would be more of their type of army aesthetic or
yeah,
parallel.
The, they would be an army of the way the aesthetic was for Kislev. It was always an arm, very much like Russia. It was an army of the peasants, peasant warriors. And then there was the army of the court. In other words, you had some people referred to them as the back during the Soviet times, they would have been referred to as the White Russians. And
right.
Then there were the the peasantry, the common folk. And if you look at their army, their some of their cavalrymen back in the day looked like Mongol raiders. Yeah. And then some of them were knights, like the Teutonic Knights, and they were the winged lancers. Phenomenal army. It was very popular. The only problem is that for some reason, GW never made it into a book. It was a white dwarf army, but it never got its own book. And no one could ever figure out why.
They did that. So they did that a lot. They had the hobgoblins for a little while. They did that a lot with, you know, and I seem to remember that, but I do remember those models. And I think even if they were to come out with those models with just very similar updates, I think that would be a fantastic line.
I think what they're going to come out with for this army is going to be phenomenal. I mean, if the concept art alone that you're showing right now on the screen looks great.
Yeah.
So I'm really hoping that we get something along the lines of that that Teutonic Mongol mix, which is what Russia is.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's exactly what Russia is. I mean, if you go to, as you well know, and probably anyone who studied geography, you know that once you got beyond Russia proper and got out into like Siberia and out onto the plains, those people are all Mongols. Those people are all descendants of the Mongols.
Right.
So that's what the bulk of your peasant army would be. So it's it just, like I said, it is going to be a highly anticipated army due to the fact that it's got so much history in it. And the Tsarina herself is an absolutely fascinating character.
Right. And, you know, I want to kind of touch on something here that I'm kind of torn like an old sweater with this concept here, because I was really happy to see Kislev coming back in some form. And of course, when it was introduced, that was going to be part of the old rank or the Warhammer old world again. I got thinking to try to be, you know, not necessarily negative or positive about it, but just a thought. Do you think, and this is going to, folks, this is going to kind of lead into the next adoration of this topic here, and that's to kind of talk about rank and flank coming back. But do you think this army or any other army or even armies of Age of Sigmar are going to be multi-playable? Do you think that we're going to be able to take our Age of Sigmar armies and play rank and flank with certain movement trays and vice versa?
Well, I don't know if GW wants that. They may want to have their own separate units for this game. Like, for instance, my Rakka Tragus I could easily use in a Orcs and Goblins army. I mean, that would be easy, because they're just trolls. They're just what used to be called stone trolls. So that would be an easy thing to convert and use in a Warhammer Fantasy army. Just, you know, stick them on movement trays.
Yeah.
But for something like my Blood Sisters, well, they didn't even exist back in the old world.
Yeah.
So, like an army like Nurgle, you're good. Any of the Chaos armies, for the most part, you should be good. But there are some armies with like that are in AOS right now that simply will not be compatible.
Oh yeah, but you know, I think to take it one step further with that thought, I think one of two things is going to happen. I think GW is going to say, okay, look, we're going to write a whole new rule book, and we're going to write a whole new set of compendium army books that are going to say, you know, they're going to bring in the sisters. They're going to bring in the Rakgut Trogoths. They're going to bring in all these Age of Sigmar, the Idoneth Deepkin, for God's sakes. You know, they're going to bring in this entire...
Now, see, that would disappoint me.
Or, well,
and I'm going to tell you why. Because, number one, those races did not exist.
Right.
The Blood Sisters did not exist. The Eels didn't exist.
I know.
Now, I'm hoping that what they do is they're truly going back to the old world. So we're going to just basically get not a rehash necessarily, but we're going to get basically the armies that we knew and loved in the old world. You would have your high elves again. You'd have the elves of Ultuan.
Yep. And I think the point that I was going to make is, or this is going to be treated like 30K is to 40K. You know, it's all going to be the old armies and the old rank and flank system with your scatter dice and the whole nine yards. But it's going to be for those people that just want to play Warhammer Fantasy Battles, just like there's people out there in the 40K community that just want to play 30K.
Well, it seems to me that this Old World project is something that's monumental. This is going to be a game changer when it comes out.
Okay, hold that thought for 1 second, because I know where you're going with this, and I think I want to set it up. Can I do that? Can I put the ball in the tee and let you kick it through the uprights?
Indulge me.
All right, so this is for everybody here, folks that are listening, and God, we got awesome listeners, don't we? We literally have.
Yeah, all
best,
over the world, for God's sake.
We got the best listeners ever. I mean, I appreciate everybody that tunes in every single week. You guys are awesome. But here we go. This is for you guys, too. So we've spoken about this official announcement of Warhammer Fantasy Battles coming back since about November the 15th of last year. And as a matter of fact, Grimdark Live was the first to report on this prior to our Thursday show. GW made the announcement the following Friday after the show, our show on that Thursday. So we had speculation that this was going to happen. And I think it was our November 21st show we kind of talked about this. Don't quote me on that, but go back and take a look if you want. And since our last conversation on this topic almost 4 months ago, I had really forgotten about this entirely until this Kislev thing came back up. Now, Steve, back then, you said something very profound. You stated that GW wouldn't punch down. And I think that's the exact phrase you made when I questioned the idea that GW was attempting to blitzkrieg the market. Do you still feel that way?
I absolutely do. GW would not create anything to compete with a company that is no competition to them. There is no one in this industry right now, and you can just look at the numbers. You don't even have to believe what I'm saying. Just look at the numbers in the industry. There's no one right now that's producing quality figures and quality games at the highest level other than Games Workshop. Now, I know, you know, there's guys out there that play Kings of War. And if you're a Kings of War player and you're listening to the show, we're not bashing Kings of War. All we're saying is that GW is not going to create a business model to compete with a company that is currently not even competition for them. Because the Kings of War players are playing rank and flank already. So they're not in direct competition with AOS. AOS is a skirmish game. They're two completely different games. So you're not going to see GW come out and say, hey, we better grab this market before someone else corners it, because GW already had this market and they let it go.
True.
Now, I think that was a bad idea. I think it was the dumbest idea ever to blow up their world that they took 30 years to create. And not only do I think it was ignorant, I thought it was disrespectful to every single author of every single book that wrote about that world and added to the richness of that world. And then GW let a bunch of yahoos come in, and because they were too unimaginative and too lazy to come in and blow up a world and start fresh. You should have left the old world alone. You should have created AOS rules, at least AOS 2, AOS 2 like rules with the old world. It would have worked just fine. You could have introduced new armies. You had a whole swath of armies that you could have introduced. You had the Army of Cathay, which is essentially China. You had the Army of Nippon, which is Japan. You had the Army of, they called it in that world, I think it was Indra, which is India, of course. You had all these different places in the world that you could have had armies coming from. I mean, it is unbelievable the amount of background and history that they could have filled that world with had they just had more imaginative people. But no, instead, and yes, I'm ranting and I don't care. No, instead, we got dance like a pony around the table. Talk to your horse like it's talking back to you or some kind of nonsense.
Oh, yeah.
And they actually thought, God, that after a sophisticated game, like Warhammer 8th edition, that you were going to throw this monkey crap in our faces and expect us to buy into it. Now, eventually you changed the rules of the game because you knew you couldn't survive with AOS 1. Nobody was playing it. It was a dead game. So my point is, if you're going to go back to Warhammer, the old world, and you're going to recreate something that you stupidly blew up 5 years ago, you damn well better get it right this time, and you better not screw us again. Because the fans of this hobby are only going to put up with so much before they say, you know what, maybe it's just time to move on.
Hey, I hope you're enjoying the Grimdark Live experience and the show. If you want to support the show, please like and subscribe on YouTube and follow us on our podcast. This way, you'll be alerted when we post new content. If you'd like to support Grimdark Live further, head over to grimdarklive.com, get a t-shirt, dice, or there's Patreon, which makes our show possible. Keeps our mics on and the lights buzzing. Big thanks to everyone, past, present, and future, who have supported Grimdark Live. We do this because of all of you, and of course, we will continue doing this for as long as we can. Okay, you guys ready for more Grimdark Live? Let's get back to the show. Steve, nobody puts it better than you. I felt like I needed to start taking notes, man. Okay, so... And folks,
yeah, and Sean just wrote on the chat, don't forget to take a drink and yell for the lady. Oh, Jesus. God.
Or how about this one, Sean? What about
the
mustache?
Are you kidding me?
Remember that whole thing about the mustache, Sean? Remember that thing?
Oh, my God. It's just, you know, it is insulting to people who spent 25 years creating canon for this old world, this beautiful world that was as rich and fantastic as Middle Earth. I would even say it had more material than Middle Earth.
I would say, yeah.
There were dozens of people writing about the old world and the richness of those books and the 30 years of intellectual property that went into that world. And somebody decided in a board meeting, you know what? I got a great idea, guys. Let's just blow it all the hell up and create this new world.
Yeah. And now, you know, look, and what's weird is the rest of those board members went, yeah, that's a great idea, Stanley. Let's do that.
Yeah. You know, now look, we moved on. We moved on. We've accepted this new world. You know, it's not the world we started playing in, but we've accepted it. We have our armies. We're having a great time. I mean, the last year of this hobby has been some of the best games and some of the best times we've ever had. But that doesn't mean that we've forgotten or that we don't long back for a world that we spent, for some of us, 25 years playing in. So
yeah,
if GW is going to come out with this new thing, this Warhammer, the old world, if they're going to really do this, if you're going to do it, you damn well better do it right. And if you're going to do it, it better be as good or better than the last version of the game that you made, which was 8th edition. And you and I have often said the only problem we had with 8th edition was the out of control magic. Other than that, it was damn near a perfect game.
Yeah. And that phrase right there, it was almost a damn near perfect game, needs to be put on a bumper sticker. Because, I mean, 8th edition was an awesome game. Other than the magic. You remember the house rules we had, Steve?
Yeah, you know, the problem that, you know, and I see a lot of the guys are commenting on it, you know, on the subject, which we knew this was going to inspire conversation. But, you know, they did have to do a hard reboot. They did. But they could have done that hard reboot in the same world. They could have just rearranged the way the game is played. I don't think they had to destroy 30 years of creativity in order to reboot their game, because that to me shows that you're not imaginative enough as a game designer to be able to reboot something in a world that you created. Yeah. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I have no animosity towards this old world. I hope it's a great game. I hope it's a game that we can play, we can all enjoy, but don't screw it up again.
Yeah. Well, let's, and folks, this is what I tried to explain to everyone in the beginning of the show. I mean, this guy, Steve, he's forgotten more than we're ever going to know about this hobby. And I love when we get the opportunity to kind of just take our little rock hammer, our little pick hammer, and just kind of chisel away a little bit at the dam of knowledge and just let it just come flying out, because it's, we get a lot of good stuff out of this. But let me try to water it down for the numbskulls like me that are out there. So, and Steve, I 1000% agree with you. I think this does tell us a lot about GW's mindset that there is a market for this type of game. Albeit, let's face some facts here. With the recent flop of Rune Wars and Ninth Age basically imploding, and you know Ninth Age was going to implode. There are a bunch of neckbeards that was going to happen. But and you know here on the show we've always referred to Ninth Age as evil, awful brand X. But with surviving game systems like Kings of War, Song of Fire and Ice, Conquest, and most recently a game called Oathmark, I know we're looking down the road at another, say, two-ish years or so before GW releases this Warhammer the Old World. But what do you how do you think GW is going to roll this out, and what do you think they're telling us by waiting two years more?
We're not attacking anybody else's game. You want to play Kings of War, you want to play Rune Wars, you want to play this other game that you just mentioned, or Game of Thrones. We don't have a problem with that.
No, not at all.
All of us play the game that we enjoy. So if I've got a bunch of guys, and I know there's, you know, a large Kings of War crew that plays at, you know, certain stores, that's fine. We're not opposed to Kings of War. I'm just saying that if GW intends to do a rank and flank reboot, it can't be because they're trying to compete with someone else, but rather that they're trying to return to the richness of an IP that they never should have abandoned to begin with.
Yes. Yeah. And this is what I'm trying to do here, Steve. And I think everyone else that's queuing in on this conversation right now is asking the same thing. You know, they're trying to search for some meaning in all this. And here's the thing, you know, I right now play Age of Sigmar, love the game, but you know, I'm not ready to even consider giving GW any more money for models after Age of Sigmar. You know, but I used to love their Black Library stuff, especially the Warhammer Fantasy world, like you just brought up, the Gotrek books. But it was so rich, yet it was familiar. You know, it was a beautifully disturbing take on medieval Renaissance Europe,
yeah.
And they destroyed it.
But that's what people loved about it, because yeah. It was a world that was fantasy, and yet there were elements of our own world and other fantasy worlds that people loved.
Yeah, and I really don't see the sense of it. And just like you were saying right now, the company has made billions of dollars. Their revenue was off the charts, and a lot of that has to do with the fact that Age of Sigmar is massively popular. And I really don't see the sense of this other than the fact that they just want to bull into another market, which, hey, you know, companies do real well when they do that successfully. But they want to bring this back. Okay, fine. It seems sort of disconcerting in a way. And let me say this first. You know, I've always believed the old world did not need to be destroyed, like you. No. You and I have talked about this probably more times than we care to no. even admit.
With it's this a travesty what they did.
Yes. With this release, it was obviously not a good idea. They know that, like you were saying. And I think in some aspects, GW has creatively limited themselves with the destruction and then the reintroduction of this potential rank and flank game. Am I off chart by saying that? Or I mean,
well, no, because see, here's what I think they're banking on. They're banking on the fact that they've got about 20 years worth of novels that they could pump out at any time to reintroduce people to the old world. So I don't think it's going to be a problem with people getting familiar with or knowing the old world. But the problem is a lot of the guys that were playing in the old world, some of those guys are gone. So
yeah.
And most of these kids that have come into Age of Sigmar, some of these younger guys, they've never played in the old world. They don't even know what the hell we're talking about. They just knew that there was an older version of Warhammer that was destroyed. That's all they know, because of course they've read about the world that was.
Right.
But there's some of us that played in that world that was, and we played in it for 20 years. So, you know, I think that if they're going to move on, if they're going to truly move on as a company in terms of their IP, why would you go backwards? I don't understand the logic of that. Now, I mean, I know that it sounds like a contradiction in many ways because I'm saying how much I love the old world and yet I don't want to go back to it. No, I don't, because you blew it up. And there's no point in going back to a world that I know has been destroyed. It, I don't know. Maybe it's just, you know, my imagination or something, but I just don't want to go back to a world that was destroyed. I want to have games and battles in a new world that has a new future. Mm-hmm. You made us look, you made us move into this new house and now we've settled in and we've moved in the furniture. Don't expect us to empty the house now and move in another set of furniture. That's not going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. And then they better explain why the toilet isn't flushed and the cat's knocked up.
Will you stop?
No. All right. No, honestly, here's what I want. And this, and folks, this is why I think a couple of old geezers like Steve and I are pretty upset. And a lot of people are, because I think that people forget how this got here. We didn't wake up one day and they said, guess what? The old world, Old Thuan, all these places, Nagaroth, it's all gone. Boom. Nobody lit a match and surprised all of us, right? They didn't 9/11 the Warhammer Fantasy Battles world. And I want to kind of take everyone down a quick little memory road here, because this was handled very poorly by a multi-million dollar corporation.
Oh, it was.
And Steve, I know this is going to drive you crazy, but I'm going to start with 2014. So GW embarked on a 6-month narrative game system called End Times. Now, I love the books that came out with End Times. I hated the game, which caused many folks to spend hundreds of dollars worth of books to existing 8th edition players that would only end in their game being discontinued. And
it was a con job. I mean, in my opinion.
It was. In the summer of 2014, they came out with this thing. By December of 2014, the world was over. And in 2015, GW officially terminated Warhammer Fantasy Battles after a 3-month stalemate of everyone wondering what the hell was going to happen.
Without letting any of us know what was happening or going on.
Yeah. And then
you made all these people. Well, you didn't make, true. Yeah. But all these people bought these books. All these people bought these books thinking, okay, they're just going to come out with something different.
Right.
Well, the something different was a completely new game, and our books that we bought that we were trying to play with our armies are now completely useless.
Right. Yeah.
And believe me, these are not the thoughts of us.
No.
These are the thoughts of the gaming community. Believe me, you could go to any number of gaming sites back in those times, and you could look at all of the messages. Believe me, we're being kind.
Yeah. But you got to understand from the idea of the people that were in the hobby at that time, because this company, GW, they came in and they ordered all the rules to be pulled from the shelves of GW stores immediately upon announcement. And I think I remember the community being shocked by this, because even some of the, you know, we know a couple of store managers that worked for GW back then and still do now, and they were literally told to get into the store 4 hours early to box everything up. Four hours early. Most of these stores open at noon. So now these guys are getting in at 8. So here's my point. This was a very shock and awe kind of a thing. And then GW replaced it, as Steve said, with a game that was totally different in Age of Sigmar. Now, back then, Age of Sigmar was, pardon my French.
It was an abomination.
It was a shit show. Pardon my French.
It was an abomination. It was the worst. It was the, and this is all my opinion, folks. So you know what? If you think otherwise, that's fine. I'm just offering my opinion, and this is an opinion show. So if anything we say offends someone, too bad. It's our opinion. I don't know how else to say it.
Right.
I'm just going to say that when we saw those first rules for Age of Sigmar, I'm not joking you, a lot of us looked at him and said, oh, this is a joke. This is GW just being a wise guy, you know, until they come out with the real rules.
Right.
And those were the real rules.
We there was a rumor going around that Age of Sigmar was a sidebar game.
Yes. Well, we had heard back in the, like I said, this is just stuff we heard, folks. So, you know, don't go wild and crazy. We heard back in the day that that GW's sales of Warhammer Fantasy were less than, like, what, 5-10% of their total sales?
Well,
40K
was
just basically king at that time.
They peaked at 11% with End Times, but it was about 4-5% pretty much.
It was horrible. Now, look, I don't have any problem with a company saying, hey, we've got a product and it's not working. I get it, but you didn't have to blow up the world that you created to come up with something new.
Right.
I love the Age of Sigmar rules. I love Skirmish. And I think the models, quite frankly, look better on rounds than they do on squares.
But let me go back
to
that.
And I never thought I'd say that.
In 2015, they promised that you could use all of your models and wouldn't need to modify them. That still didn't stop that one guy from burning his Dark Elf army. I bet he feels like a real asshat.
Why don't
now.
You sell it on eBay? I mean, I don't know why that guy did that, but anyway.
But as an appeasement, GW stated, bases don't matter, play away. Well, now we know that that's not the case anymore because they have their own base guide. You know, and again, folks, I'm just trying to make everyone understand why some of us are still a little raw about this, because we're a consumer. We were a customer. We weren't just somebody that was mully-dullying around this. And so now enter 2016. GW purged armies from their games and shelves, making many collections unusable in regular games. And most game organizers started requiring...
AKA Bretonians and Tomb Kings.
There you go. I think Sean just put down on the... Sean just mentioned he has 8,000 to 12,000 points of Bretonian just sitting on a shelf somewhere.
And there was nothing more gorgeous than a fully painted Bretonian army on the table.
No kidding.
It was a masterclass painter's dream to have a Bretonian army.
Right.
Because the things that I've seen only two or three masterclass painted Bretonian armies on the table, and they make you want to play Bretonians even if you don't like them.
Right.
Because the army can be so beautiful.
Yeah.
God, I hope they bring that back. I hope they bring back the Bretonians.
I really do
glory.
Too. I really do too. And you know, and sticking with 2016 and folks, I'm going to kind of make sure this point here that we're making has a sharp one, because you got to understand 2016 was kind of the pimple pop year, to put it that way, for what happened. The shockwave kind of really, you know, grounded out at that point. You know, the entire rank and flank gaming community, and even though I wasn't a rank and flank gamer anymore at that time, I was really struggling to play Age of Sigmar. They were fractured in many different directions, really by GW's actions.
People were making up points. Up points by determining the amount of wounds your army had. I mean, that's how bad it was for people.
But where do you think Kings...
High Class just made a great point. And I remember when they said this. This is back in the day when they were telling us, oh, well, we're not a rules company. We're a model company.
Yeah,
how'd that work out for you?
Yeah, exactly.
That's why all of a sudden we had a general's handbook about, 6-7 months later?
Right.
Because your products weren't selling?
But you know what's funny? As a response to this rank and flank community that was out there playing Kings of War, Ninth Age, and many people that stuck with Warhammer Fantasy Battles, in 2017, GW put out official statements to many tournament organizers, including those TOs at Adepticon. And Adepticon, folks, is one of the biggest events in the United States, that they had to drop support of the Ninth Age in order to get any kind of support by GW, financial, obviously, leading to many events to drop Ninth Age without any explanation or any type of shoddy explanations even.
Well, yeah, they moved across the street. If I'm correct, that one year they moved they moved the Ninth Age tournament across the street to another hotel.
Yeah, I'll say this: I'm not saying I like Ninth Age. I'm the guy that coined the phrase "evil, awful brand X." I don't care for the game. I never understood
Don't know anything about.
Well, why not just continue playing Warhammer Fantasy Battles 8th Edition?
What I didn't understand.
But here's the thing:
Warhammer 8th.
What you are doing, you're doing it to people. And folks, we're a community-based show. You know, we talk about the social contract and forget about the game. You know, I mean, so moving on, now we're 2018. Communities of Kings of War and Ninth Age were putting on dozens of events in the U.S. that were, in some cases, as big as Warhammer Fantasy Battle events of previous years. And here, culminating here, to this very moment in the show, in 2019, in November, a couple of weeks after a new edition of Kings of War, which is their third edition, was released. And I have to admit, it is a pretty amazing quality. They have stepped it up with their models. But not a game I'm going to play. But GW announced that they were making some kind of new, and here it is, Warhammer Fantasy edition called The Old World. And they literally made the decision and announced it, right away in a very un-GW fashion. And so...
But that could have been... Now, hold on. That could have been for several reasons. One of which, they may have said, to themselves in a boardroom, you know, wow, the decision we made as a company 4 or 5 years ago when we destroyed the old world, maybe that wasn't such a great idea since we had so much invested in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I guarantee you, somebody said, well, why don't we recreate it and just relabel it? I'm telling you, that's where this came from. There are some guys that just said, look, there's still, you know, a need for this or a desire for this out in the community.
Right. Right. You know, and there is, you know, and here's the thing. I'm not going to lie. Oftentimes I get the itch and Evan, my son, is always like, you know, don't even bring it up anymore. But I get the itch all the time. I'm saying, hey, listen, dude, let's get a small game of rank and flanking. And because I do miss the mechanics. Yeah, it was a complicated game. It was cumbersome in some points. But I got to tell you, when I really put everything into perspective, as a businessman myself, my day job, I look at this and I say, you know, how would you expect people to not reflect on how you handled literally a 5-year period? You know,
if they didn't get a clue with a guy burning a $700 to $800 army, one would think that they'd get a clue by the fact that when I walked into a GW store, which I shall remain nameless, I didn't see a single game of Age of Sigmar being played for the entire year, that first year that it was out. Not to mention the fact that the section for Age of Sigmar was dead. And the only thing you ever saw going on in that store was 40K. I mean, folks, and I'm just going to harp on it because I have to. When you tell someone to dance around the table and act like they're riding a horse, I mean, I find it insulting. I don't think it's funny at all. I think it's insulting. I think it's demeaning to the people who spent years investing and playing in that world and in that game. And then that's what you turn it into. But like High Class was saying, that's when they were in that mode where we're a models company. We don't care about rules. Yeah, well, that worked out great for you. And then somebody with some sense came in and said, what the hell did we do to our company?
Right.
And what are we doing with this game? And that's when AOS with points came out. And then, of course, AOS 2, which is great. I love AOS 2. I don't have any problems with it.
I love where we're at right now with Age of Sigmar. Yeah. Look, and the proof love is it. In the pudding. The game is growing. More and more people are coming into the game from other game systems. And again, this isn't to knock other game systems.
No,
but
not at all.
The fact of the matter is, people are coming in. And you know what? And I think it's a testament to not only the game itself, but the community as a whole. I think, look at how many tournaments there are now. Look, I mean, I can tell you from being a former Warhammer Fantasy Battles player, for every one tournament we had back then, Steve, and you'll know this, there's what, maybe 10 times the amount of tournaments now? And it's just exploded.
Well, and you also don't see, and here's one of the good things about Sigmar that came from that change. And there are some good things that did come from it. I'm not trying to say that the Switch was all bad. There were some good things that came out of it. And one of them is the tournament scene in general. You don't nearly see the rules lawyering that you used to see years ago.
No.
You know, you'll always have your whiners and your criers. You're always going to have that. That's, you know, you'll have that till the end of time. But
yeah,
you don't see people having a bad time when they're playing. You go around the tables, and for the most part, it's people having a good time. It's people laughing. It's people, you know, kicking back and taking pictures and laughing with their friends. That's what the game should always be.
Right.
Even at the tournament level, you know, and I don't think anybody puts on a better example of that than Steve Herner.
No, that's true. No, Herner puts on a great, great event. Awesome event.
Well,
absolutely.
His event is the epitome of what Warhammer should be.
Right.
As we've often said in the past.
Right. So folks, that's our 2 cents in a tin can. And of course, I got to tell you, if I threw 2 cents in the tin can, Steve just put $23.86 in there, man. His knowledge is pretty immense when it comes to this hobby and this game. But, you know, folks, this is our experience. So more so than it's our opinion, it's our input, because, you know, we were there. We saw the change, and you know, our first soiree into fantasy wasn't with Age of Sigmar. And so I think for us, we're just reflecting back and kind of looking at this a little bit with a little bit more of a cautious angst. You know, I mean, is this going to come in and be what 30K is to 40K? We don't know. Is this going to come in and offer up the ability to play your Age of Sigmar army on some type of square base with circle pegs? We have no idea. Is this going to come in and just totally be a re-whitewash of the old system that you can play with the old books and everything else with some, maybe some compendium models that they're going to repress? We don't know. But this is the story of how we got to this point. We're not trying to say that any game is better than the other. And my personal opinion with Ninth Age is just that. I never understood it. It seemed like a stupid concept to me. Just play 8th edition and with some house rules and you're fine. But whatever. But even that, I didn't care for the way that community was kind of muscled around. So that's why we bring this stuff up. Because we wanted everyone to kind of understand where we came from. Because more so than this is our opinion, this is our input because we were there. So moving on.
It's certainly opinion based upon experience, yeah.
Well, that's,
but,
yeah.
I mean, just to close out the thoughts on this, Warhammer Old World looks like it is a fine idea. I don't have any problem with it. If it comes out and it's good and it looks like it might be fun, I'll give it a try. I'm not opposed to trying it, but I'm hoping that the company is not as callous this time as they were last time when they brought about a change in the fantasy community.
Right.
That's all I'm saying.
Right.
But like I said, let's move on.
Wait a minute. What the hell is that? What's going on?
And now it's time for that part of the show where we present the rules from hell.
Yes, that's right, Grimdark Goons. It's time for the rules from hell, where we present the game rules from the past or present of the Warhammer worlds that just sucked.
Here it is, gang, a Warhammer rule from hell. In the first edition of Warhammer Age of Sigmar, Bretonian Grail Knights had a pretty ridiculous rule called the Grail Vow. The Bretonian Knights are dedicated to a quest for a holy goblet. Little do they know, it's just above them in the real world being swung around by a nerd playing a game. In the Grail Vow, you can reroll all failed hit rolls for this unit before rolling the dice if you hold aloft a grail or goblet and shout, "For the Lady," in a ridiculous, heroic voice. I gotta tell you, for nothing else other than this, I'm happy this army got squatted. That was definitely a rule from hell.
And now you know a rule from hell.
All right, let's get back to the show. I wanted to kind of talk a little bit about old Nurgle. You know, everybody, I think, understands what we're all going through in this country and in this world with this COVID-19 or coronavirus or whatever the hell you want to call it. And I think it was fitting. And I'm not going to go into the units and the strengths. And I'm going to just kind of give a little bit of a talk about what and who Nurgle and what that faction is. And we've got some listeners that know 10 times more about Nurgle than I do. I've just always loved their backstory, their lore. I love reading about
them. It's the most compelling of all the Chaos Gods in my
opinion. You're not kidding. And Nurgle is the great lord of decay and the master of plagues and pestilence, and his body is riddled with disease and infections. And that's why I thought it was perfect to kind of tell a little bit of a story about this. You know, you see, Nurgle knows that the living know that they will die. And many know that they will live with, you know, disease or some other torment. Yet they drive this knowledge into a corner of their minds and keep it restrained there for all manner of time. And this is where Grandpa Nurgle comes in. Nurgle is the embodiment of that knowledge and of the unconscious response to it, of the hidden fear of disease and decay and the power of life, which that fear generates. Now, I was told once, Steve, I don't know if you've heard this too, but I was told once early in my time in the hobby that Nurgle was the third most powerful Chaos God after Khorne and Tzeentch, respectively.
Well, their power waxes and wanes.
Right.
But Nurgle is definitely one of the, I would say he is one of the greater gods of chaos, if mm-hmm. there is such a creature. And he, in other words, Slaanesh, I would always consider to be a lesser god because he's just an annoying little wretch.
Right.
But
yeah.
Nurgle has always been one of the greater gods.
Yeah.
I put him up there. He's in the same category to me as Khorne and Tzeentch.
I would say this. Predominantly, and I'm gonna kind of explain my little story here, that I would say that if he's not first, he's so close that the average person wouldn't know the difference. Because Nurgle is easily, and could be argued, the most successful of the Chaos Gods in fantasy. I'm going to tell everyone this interesting little tidbit of information here. The reason why I say this is because he actually had a champion sworn to him specifically, rather than the Chaos Gods Undivided, like Archaon is, that got closest to claiming the throne of Chaos and having contributed the most to the end times itself. And that champion is Tamarkhan. And are you aware of who Tamarkhan is, Steve?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I'm referencing the Throne of Chaos campaign book. But that story and topic is actually for another time. But if you get a chance, folks, to get out there and get that book, if you can find it, get it, read it. However, Tamarkhan is fantastically, and I got to tell you this, Steve, in every sense of the word, just a horrible concept. And this is what Nurgle does. Whoever writes for Nurgle has done time in a mental institution. They had to have.
Well, he would fall into the same category as Cthulhu.
Okay.
Kind of,
yeah.
That kind of disgusting, revolting kind of monster, godlike creature.
Yeah, and you know, in a little bit here, in my little story of Nurgle, I've got some interesting parallels from real life as actual inspirations of Nurgle that came from the authors of early Games Workshop. But I'll get into that here in a little bit. See, I do this kind of research, folks, because I like to tell these full stories. But Tamarkhan, back to him. Who Tamarkhan is a giant maggot who eats his way into the flesh of a host victim before using its decaying body as a vehicle to drag itself around. I mean, the concept of being driven around by your killer as your body rots is just gruesome, and even more so for Tamarkhan's first host body. Now this comes again out of the Throne of Chaos story. His first host was a Slaanesh champion who's, now think about this, folks, Slaanesh, right? They're a bunch of raving perverts, you know, whose good looks and nice shiny armor slowly decayed over time, obviously much to Tamarkhan's amusement. And that's the exact word that I want to, that explains Nurgle. The absolute delight and amusement. See, Nurgle loves you. He brings you family, love at the time to embrace you fully. And he wants you to become one with everything he's offering. He accepts you for who you are as long as you stay that way. Also, don't wash, don't shave, don't change your underwear. You're great the way you are. He knows that you have been abandoned by your past friends, your lovers, and your family. He knows that you need the feeling of belonging, security, and stability in your life. He will embrace you if you trust him to bring you an internal, painless existence. Just ignore the smell. And Nurgle is, in reality, the strongest god in terms of stoic emotions, such as, I mean, empathy, kinship, happiness, struggle, love, tradition, inevitability, mercy, and the big one, memory. Nurgle teaches to accept entropy and rot and persevere despite it.
Yeah, I've said this many times before. He is entropy made manifest.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's exactly who Nurgle is.
Yeah. And that's what makes him so freaking creepy.
Well, I've often, and I don't mean to.
No, go ahead.
Butt in here. I'm just saying, when I would always imagine which of the Chaos Gods would be the most horrifying to face, I would say Nurgle every time. I mean, if I was some foot soldier in an Empire army and I knew that I was going up against a Nurgle horde,
Yeah.
I'm not worried. I'm not worried until after the battle. I know that if once I've engaged with these troops, 2 days later, I'm going to be dropping dead from some festering disease.
Yeah.
And that was what always made, at least in the stories, that's what always made troops fearful of Nurgle. Khorne will just kill you. He'll just cut you right in half.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're going to die or rot slowly with Nurgle when you face him. So right. He is, in my opinion, he is the most terrifying of the Chaos Gods, because you may beat him on the battlefield, but he's going to beat you 2 days later in the bed.
Yeah, but about a week later, you're going to start coughing.
Yeah, you're going to be dead.
And let's stick with that.
Died of the pox.
Yeah, and let's stick with that concept for a second. His soldiers, his followers. I mean, Nurgle followers, folks, are all that literally disgusts. They're ripe. They're fat, smelly. I mean, other than being bloated living corpses filled with all types of maggots and worms, here we go back to this again. They're jovial, mirthful, and generous with their gifts. Nurgle followers, something else that I want to point out, they have some iconic traits. They have singular or triple eyes arranged in a triangle. They have long tongues or insectoid type appearances. Sometimes some of them have singular horns. And they're all ringing bells. I haven't figured out the bell thing yet. I'm gonna have to do a little more research.
Well,
on that, but
for whom the bell tolls, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I guess so. But bells are creepy anyways. They usually paint their armor in like snotty green, dookie browns, or kind of like puke bile yellow. They're just they're nasty. And yeah, I could imagine. I mean, with Khorne, you know what you're getting. With Zeech, you might question what you're getting and figure it out later. But with Nurgle, you are going to be so sorry with what you got. Here's the funny thing, and this is the part that I want to tie into what we're currently going through now. Nurgle's gift to the mortal universe is the promise of relief of pain and anguish. Many plagues.
Yeah, he is the god of the downtrodden.
Yeah, that's right.
He's the god of the outcast, the downtrodden, because they're always the ones that give up their soul to him.
Right.
Because,
exactly.
You know, that's the poor, disfigured, kid that grew up on the streets of, the Empire.
Mm-hmm.
He's the kind of person that's going to grow up one day and become a servant of Nurgle.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, Nurgle is the most appealing to the masses. And there's certainly a lot of downtrodden people in the Empire.
That's true.
At least in the old world.
And what's so creepy about it is many of those plagues are the pleasures within the promise that he's offering. And that's when I read these stories about Nurgle, it just literally just hits me. I can't get it out of my mind. And these things are completely incurable, highly infectious, has a very slow course that turns the infected into bloated, rotting corpses. And worst of all, it corrupts the soul of the infected. And they later, when they die, that's where the plague bearers come from. The plague bearers were once people.
Victims of Nurgle, yeah.
Yeah. And just to think that these things are the reincarnated souls of Nurgle's followers or the victims that fell to Nurgle's rot, the whole thing is so much more vile and scary than any of the other Chaos Gods even combined. And here's what's funny. I'll say this too. Nurgle's chosen mortal champions in fantasy and Age of Sigmar are either the Warriors of Chaos, the Magakin, and these beings have willingly accepted his many diseases and let him turn them into these like shambling, bloated, zombie-like beings that no longer feel any pain. And that's the key phrase or the underlining promise that I was referring to that he gives his followers. No longer feel any pain. And
well, don't you remember the Carnival of Chaos for Mordheim?
That's right, my favorite
game.
Don't
you remember that the wagon, the little plague wagon they used to have?
And
everybody used that thing as a black coach back in the day.
Right.
But that was one of that Carnival of Chaos or whatever it was. That was one of the creepiest things they ever made.
I forgot about that thing, Steve.
Remember
great
that?
Memory.
It was like the psycho circus.
See, folks, this is what I'm talking about here. 25 years of knowledge. I forgot about that thing. Yeah, Mordheim was my favorite game.
And that was a great model. And I'm trying to remember who had that kit. I think it was one of our old timers that had that kit and had painted it up. But God, was it sweet looking.
I got it. You know, all these memories, everything are just flushing back in my mind. But this is what we're saying here, folks. I mean, ultimately, the cure that Nurgle offers you is actually worse than the pain or the disease. And you know what's funny? I want to kind of add this while we're talking about Nurgle here. One Nurgle character that comes to mind, and you got me thinking about this, knowing you brought up Mordheim, but one character that comes to mind while talking about all this, as I guess to one that's trying to distance himself from the pain and the despair. And when you mention carnival, I think, okay, a happy time, you go to a carnival to relax, and then what Nurgle does. But this character that was trying to distance himself from pain and despair, which is a tragic story, is Festus the Leech Lord.
Yeah.
And you know this, Steve. In mortal life, he was known as Dr. Festus, who was a skilled doctor who was compassionate and gifted. And I think he specialized in, like, curative potions and kind of an elixir type of a guy. And
fantastic stories.
Yeah, and he was a good doctor. He cured hundreds of people every year. And this was the onset of a plague in his village that marked the beginning of the end of Festus, what happened. And I guess he tried to fight it, but he could not stem the spread of this disease. And the guy worked day and night with no cure for this plague. And it drove him mad. And then entered Nurgle with a promise. And Nurgle promised to give Festus the knowledge necessary to cure not only this particular plague that he was fighting, but all of the diseases in the world in exchange for a lifetime of service. And I guess in his desperation, because he was really a kind-hearted person, Festus agreed and was reborn Festus the Leech Lord. And that story was one of the first I ever read about Nurgle. And I think that was the one that kind of made me go, wow, this is the most creepy, sad thing I've ever came across. And I've been
well, that's
almost
what Nurgle says to you. You know, I'll take away your sadness. I'll take away your isolation. I'll take away your loneliness.
Yeah.
I'll be your grandfather. You know, right. You'll have all your fellow, you know, you'll have all your fellow cousins to be with. That's
yeah.
the promise Nurgle gives you. And that's why he is so creepy, because in many ways, he's being genuine. He's not going to kill you. He's not going to hurt you. He wants you to spread the faith, spread the love.
Yeah, that's very true.
That's who Nurgle is. Nurgle, I mean, it's funny because in many ways, he's not evil so much as he is demented.
Oh, now you've reminded me of a whole nother story. I mean, even up to here, you want to talk about dementia? Did I just cut you off, or can I keep going with this?
No, go.
So even here with our Age of Sigmar game, there's a great story and a great description of the appearance of the plague garden and the demons and all that in the novel, The Hallowed Knight's Plague Garden. So if you get a chance to read that, guys, you know, or girls and folks, do that, because talk about creepy is, besides the description, and the authors do a great job of describing the garden and the nurglings and the demons and the slime, and it's just you can picture it in your mind. But at one point in the story, you want to talk about demented here, Steve, this is what reminds me of it. One point in the story reminds me to when Nurgle kept the human goddess, I think it was Shalia, captive.
No, that was an elven goddess that he kept.
That's what it was. Yeah. In his pox fulcrum, until she was rescued by a Stormcast hero. And throughout this story, the reader, myself, or anyone, gets the sense of how creepy Nurgle is. Demented, I guess, is a better way to put it. As
yeah.
Nurgle becomes more and more fixated on Alariel and her dryad daughters, really. And it was a weird sense of, like, you got a first sense of, like, Nurgle's kind of a pervert, too. But I'm digressing on another story here and not the point. So, but folks, read that. So let's get back to the cusp here of what I'm talking about here with Nurgle. And so why I'm bringing this up is because Nurgle is the primary god of despair, stagnation, death, decay, and in a way, as we said here, entropy, you know, signifying the end of all things in the material realm. Although this is technically a position he shares with Zeech, whom he hates. But Nurgle can be considered the god of everything, because no matter how permanent anything may seem, it will always eventually wither and decay in the end. I mean, Nurgle understands while death is inevitable, even the mere mortal is going to fight against it with all of his available power. He understands that he can offer something. So that's why I wanted to present this, because to close out this discussion on the God of Plagues, I'd like to share some fun facts about Nurgle. Anything to add before I get into these?
No, good.
Because you know how oftentimes in this game or this hobby, you know, we'll look at the new Lumineth Realm Lords and refer to them as the Hippotite, you know, Greeks who are actual Greeks. And, you know, well, the writers and the people that actually began developing the concept of Nurgle in the late 70s and early 80s actually drew from real life inspiration, which I thought was pretty interesting. And I don't know if you know this, but a fun fact about Nurgle, the first piece of little information here is Nurgle himself was actually modeled after an Assyrian deity or god. And you know what his name was, Steve? Nurgle. And it was pronounced a little bit differently. And it was called Nergal. And the Assyrian deity of what? Pestilence, disease, underworld, decay, and hunting. And I thought this was kind of funny because he's the only Warhammer deity that actually has connotations to the real life deities, both pre and post Christianity. There was a lot that was brought into this character from those influences. Did you even know that?
No, I didn't.
The second inspiration, I think, is probably a little bit more to anyone's recognizery. And I'm not trying to, I don't care if you're Christian or atheist or Jewish, I don't care what you are, but this is just where it came from. The second inspiration comes from the Bible. And this is true. This is how they came up with Nurgle. Regarding the description of hell, I think from the prophecy of Isaiah, I believe. And to kind of quote it here, it said, "Instead of a sweet smell, there shall be stench. Decaying matter emits so horrible an odor that no one likes to go near it. But if we imagine not one tainted carcass, but hundreds of thousands heaped together, the air for miles round would be so infected, it would cause the death of all in the vicinity. The very bodies of the reprobates were so foul and disgusting that they emit a most offensive odor worse than any stench in this world." Kind of interesting that those two things were drawn as inspiration for when they were developing Nurgle. And he's, yeah, you know, the only chaos god that actually draws from that. And, you know, it's funny. I've always liked Nurgle as much as I've loathed Nurgle. I like the story arc.
Yeah,
of his character,
I agree.
And his followers. But I hate the idea of what that means. I mean, Nurgle represents...
I love playing against Nurgle armies. Yeah. Just because they're so creepy looking and they are the most fearful of the chaos gods.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I just think the underlining tone of what Nurgle represents.
But yeah, go ahead.
No, sorry, but I think we might have lost you and I thought you had stopped talking.
No. He's basically entropy on steroids. And an interesting fact, the doctor who actually came up with the theory for the universe was eventually going to be consumed by black holes, so he ended up killing himself. Look it up. It's a true story.
Wow. That's interesting. Well, yeah. So there it is. Hey gang, I really hope you're enjoying the Grimdark Live show so far. Thanks for being with us. But before we get to the question of the day, I want to ask you to head over to grimdarklive.com to enter the Nerd Bunker by becoming a supporter of the show on Patreon. There are 6 different levels to fit the support you may be interested in, and all provide special benefits and services to our members. So please head over to grimdarklive.com and become a patron of the show. And while you're on grimdarklive.com, you should know that Grimdark Live isn't just there for entertainment. We're a full-time miniatures assembly and painting service. We have 3 different levels that we currently paint to, and we provide free quotes. So let us know if you have something you need painted, and we'll get it done for you. And if Patreon or painting isn't something you're ready to do at this time, we totally understand. And thank you for spending time with us here on Grimdark Live. So with that said, let's get to the question of the day. So here's the question of the day. Is there a breaking point for a gamer and their game, i.e. when like major rules changes and stuff like that?
There can be. Usually it's more army based.
Okay.
So like if army points change to the point where your army is no longer playable, you may, and there's people who get so sick of the rules of a game that they leave it. DP. Yeah. People that can happen.
Yeah.
Leave, you know, leave the army, but then.
So go, right, ahead, well, go ahead and
I
finish your point.
I just said that. All right. I basically just said that a person may leave an army because a points changes, and another time they may leave the game because the game just is no longer playable in their eyes.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that. And that's almost exactly what I would say as far as an answer to that question of the day. So yeah, folks, I mean, sit back and think about it yourself. I mean, you know, the question of the day, is there a breaking point for a gamer in their game, you know, i.e., you know, major rule changes or something like that? Have you ever had to go through that? So, yeah, well, I guess we're at to that point where we ran a little bit over. We thought it was going to be a quick show tonight, but we're a little bit over, but that's a good thing, right?
Yeah, we have a lot to talk about.
So I think the closing thoughts are on me tonight, and I'd like just to kind of close out with a couple of thoughts of where I kind of see some things that have happened recently. At the risk of sounding like an old fuddy-duddy, you know, whatever happened to civility, you know, and I'm not going to lecture too much here, folks, but by civility, I mean the measure of the quality of the interactions we have with others. You know, civility is something that can be easily lost in today's climate, you know, plagued by the coronavirus, which has resulted in the shelter in place order and all this social distancing. Our very own social contract that we talk about here on the show is based on the notion of civility. But civility isn't a recognized practice around here lately, at least not a couple of things that I've seen. This COVID-19 thing has caused rifts in everything from politics to economics to toilet paper brawls and even fits in our little gaming community. One place I thought, at the very least, could be a sanctuary from all this mess was this hobby. But we just can't seem to be civil to one another. And I'm not going to go into too much detail here, but on Tuesday night, I came across a post from a fairly well-known game store, and I'm not going to mention where. And I'll say for sure that the owner of this store is a real good guy. The store is a real nice store. I've had a lot of great times there. Steve, you too, right?
Absolutely.
So I'm sure that the comments and claims that were made by this particular person were made out of frustration and worry during these lousy times. And I think there's a measure of understanding and forgiveness allotted to this particular store owner. Fear of the unknown is a real thing that we're all going through. And this store owner is only human. So I'm going to oblige the essence of the written post and not mention names and also be likewise passive aggressive in part of my closing thoughts. The store owner pointed out two accusations that a couple of other stores were ignoring the shelter in place order by offering curbside pickup, implying that this was directly causing harm via passing on the virus to their customers. I suppose implying that the store owner was contagious with COVID-19 and touched a box and that was handed to their customer, implying that these stores didn't care about their community as much as they do because these other stores are greedy and essentially Nurgle-ridden outfits. Let's just put it that way. But what caught me was the second implication that these stores were opening for business. And my initial thought was they're letting folks in the store through the back door and having some type of coronavirus sell-off. So naturally, I thought I'd investigate this because that is definitely wrong. But that's not the case. All of these stores that I checked up on are definitely closed. But as of the shelter-in-place order, all posted statements that the stores will be closed, but that they will accommodate customers via shipping product that is ordered remote and electronically. And all comments attached to all of those posts were nothing short of praise. But what changed now? Why the feeling of frenzy of negative comments now that I've been reading as comments to this particular post? Could it be a lack of civility? Maybe. You know, if you're against stores operating like this in times like these, then make up your adult mind and not make hobby purchases during this pandemic. But if you're conflicted, let me ask you, Do you order from Amazon or have gotten a UPS or FedEx package? Do you check your mail in your mailbox? If you do, then all of those companies and organizations are wrong because they've most likely contaminated you. Have you had a pizza delivered or gone through a drive-through, or has a small business restaurant delivered food to your car or your door? Wouldn't that be considered curbside delivery? You weren't going to tell me McDonald's is essential because they serve fast food, are you? If you have been to that essential grocery store to get fruits, milk, and bread, could those packages be contaminated? I mean, shit, they're shipped by a trucking company and then handled by some C-plus average high school student. Those Twinkies could be contaminated, Steve. I guess the hell with the grocery store then too, huh? I mean, here's an iconic twist here, Steve. Has anyone had Chinese food delivered or brought to their car via curbside? Just a thought. We need to get back to that climate of civility. Assume the best of people. We can too easily misunderstand or misinterpret and take offense when we really don't know the plights of some of these other store owners or these people. For many, that store is their only source of income. They don't have a primary job to fall back on, and their livelihood is literally at stake, a stake that a government check won't solve. And to them, essential doesn't mean permission from the government. There's no martial law order here. Other people's situations isn't yours. Be a role model of civil communication in what you say, your tone, and how you listen. Before you act, think about the potential impact of what you want to communicate and how you want to communicate it. Never engage in name-calling and personal attacks. And for shit's sake, stay away from social media for difficult conversations. Rely on facts rather than assumptions and rumors or hearsay. And stand up for yourself and others. Being civil doesn't mean being passive or worse, passive-aggressive. Challenge incivility in any form, but do it in a civil way. In other words, remember the social contract that we talk about here in Grimdark Live, and don't be a short pants. That's my closing thoughts. So that's it. To outline, yeah. Or am I good?
No. I think that maintaining a level of civility is always a good thing in a gaming community.
Well, thank you. All right. Well, that's another great show.
Grimdark Live, we'd like to thank you for slumming it through another show with us for all things dice, dragons, demons, and a dwarf in the Age of Sigmar worlds. We'll be back live next Thursday, so until then, remember, roll them dice fun and fair, and don't be a frickin' short pants. If you missed the live show, you can catch us again right here on the next Grimdark Live podcast. Never fear, gang. There'll be more great content from Grimdark Live throughout the week with Monster Mondays, Table War Tuesdays, Warhammer Wednesdays, Grimdark Grudge Matches, and a ton more. So stay tuned and stay grim, all you dice-chucking, glue-sniffing gamer goons. You're all awesome.
Looks like I picked the wrong week to stop sniffing glue.
Remember, embrace the main message here from Grimdark Live, and that's a social contract we have between gamers and the commitment we have to each other and this community. We're only as good as our last game. Check us out at GrimdarkLive.com. Don't forget to give our channel a like or subscribe if you haven't already done so. So long, Grimdark Goons. Until next time, may the dice gods bless you and your sweaty palms.